child cried out for help. Didn't you hear the sound? Did your heart break? Does your heart break now? Thank you. Does your heart break? Does your heart break? Does your heart break when the heart breaks? Does your heart break?
I brought the brittle leaves of the conversation I'd had, the one that ended in disillusionment, almost panic, and left them there in the corner of my garden, not really sure why I did what I did, except that the garden has always been a place for me to think, to mull things over. When the news that my friend's husband had passed just a few short months after she lost both her parents, him, her partner, to COVID, they, her parents, to old age, when she, a nurse, who has given herself tirelessly to the service of others for the past 24 months, told me this news, I, full of anger, questions, and fear, couldn't help myself. I pulled the last of the cabbages that the sheep had eaten when they broke through my garden gate and tossed the half-eaten plants, roots and all, into the pile with the brittle leaves. I hacked away at what was left of the cabbages with my garden hoe until, exhausted by my own self-righteous indignation, I left the corner of my garden. My daughter crawled onto my lap, me staring at my computer, she holding the kind of carefree wisdom that only 10-year-olds do. Her ask, "When will I be done with work? And will there be time to pick wildflowers before dark, before the cows beat us to them?" I couldn't help myself. I knew we must. They, the wildflowers, sat in a mason jar on the kitchen table for 12 whole days before I picked them up on my way to gather greens for our evening meal and toss them into the corner of my garden. Were you there when they
Amen. This evening we gather with followers of the way throughout the world to mark the remembrance of Jesus's death on the cross. And we do that here both in the sanctuary and online. I want to just say a couple of words about that as we continue to move in worship. My name is Matt Smith, and along with Linda Duhirsu, we serve as the co-pastors here, and Molly Knappen is with us to help guide our worship as well, sharing scripture. For those that are online, Chloe McKellier, our cultivator for a sustainable future, is there with you online. And if you have questions, if you need to be in a spirit of prayer, you're welcome to sign in to share that either online or move to the pew, the row actually where Chloe is. Those of us here in this space, we want to just lift up two things for us as we move through this night. And then we move into what some call the silence of Saturday. Then we will gather at sunrise in the Rose Garden at McKinley Park. We will gather there for celebration of both baptisms and resurrection in the Rose Garden early in the morning as the sun rises, and then here in the sanctuary at 9:30 and at 11. And tonight we pause with people around the world to hold the depth and the truth and the reality of death in this moment, and then we turn on Sunday with the world toward hope. We know that there are so many people in our midst, friends, neighbors, colleagues, that are longing for some hope right now. And so in the silence of that Saturday, we would invite you to step tenderly and prayerfully to folks in your life who might be looking for that kind of an expression of hope and make an invitation in the way that feels real for you. We are going to keep moving in this Holy Friday worship experience. This is a song that was originally written by a group called The Brilliance. It's a powerful and stunning reflection on the crucifixion, upon the words Jesus cries from the cross. So I invite us to stay seated as you feel led. For those online, maybe to take some time and to light candles in prayer. For folks that are here, to move as you need to any of the candles around the sanctuary. We'll continue to move ever more deeply into the heart of God. This is Have You Forsaken Me?
God, have you forsaken me? Forsaken me? Forsaken me? Oh God, have you forsaken me? Forsaken me? Forsaken me, forsaken me, forsaken me. Oh God, have you forsaken me, forsaken me? Thank you.
We encourage those here in the sanctuary and those online to follow along with your own Bibles or with the screen as I share John 19, 23 through 30, as it is recorded in the First Nations Version, an indigenous translation of the New Testament. The soldiers stripped his clothes from him when they nailed his hands and feet to the cross. They tore one of his garments into four pieces, one for each guard. His long outer garment was woven together into one piece. So they said, "Let us not tear this. We can draw straws for it." This gave full meaning to the sacred teachings that said, "They divided my clothes between them and gambled for my garment." This is what the soldiers did as they kept watch over Creator sets free, Jesus. Standing near the cross was bitter tears, Mary, the mother of Creator sets free, who had come to see him along with her sister. Two other women also came with her, brooding tears, Mary, the wife of traitor, Clopas, and strong tears, Mary, from Creator's high lodge, Magdala. He shows goodwill, John, the much-loved follower of Creator Sets Free, was also there with them. When Creator Sets Free looked down and saw them, he said to his mother, "Honored woman, look to your son." Then he said to his follower, "Look to your mother." From that time, the follower took bitter tears into his family and cared for her. Creator Sets Free, knowing he had done all the ancient sacred teachings had foretold, said, "I thirst." There was a vessel of sour and bitter wine standing nearby. One of the soldiers dipped a cloth in it to soak up some wine. He wrapped the cloth around the tip of a hyssop branch and held it up to the mouth of Creator Sets Free. Then he tasted the bitter wine, turned his head to the sky, and cried out loud, "It is done." He then lowered his head to his chest and with his last breath gave up his spirit.
I can't believe this is happening. I can't believe this is happening. I can't believe this is happening. How many times have we found ourselves thinking or saying this over the last 2 years? There are all manner of situations and reasons which call this forward. I cannot believe this is happening. There's one time, though, when it's fairly common in my experience. This phrase or something like it is one we often hear or say when the reality of someone else's imminent or recent death is at hand. It doesn't seem dependent on the health or the age of the person who is dying. From the unborn to a person who has lived a long life and died, I can't believe this is happening. It also seems true to have the sense that death is likely, even expected, but that doesn't equate to being ready for it to happen. How could it? The death of another brings with it the complex work of defining our relationships with that person. We experience a potent mix of love and regret and sadness and anger and hope and sometimes even relief. And the grieving process, it's neither quick nor predictable, personally or communally. Every year on Holy Friday, the gospel text is the same. John chapters 18 and 19. It's a very long and detailed passage, one that has inspired all manner of artists. Music has been composed to communicate it. Dramas have been written to carry its deepest truths. Paintings take any number of directions. That's by Graham Sutherland, entitled Crucifixion. That's by Salvador Dali, same title. And worship on Holy Friday is created to bring followers of Jesus into the narrative, the story that in so many ways defines us as followers on the way. And it is a story that in many ways reads us as much as we read it. To be clear, we read this story on this side of the grave. We know that Christ is risen. We also know that the cycles of death and resurrection in our lives don't just happen between Holy Friday and Easter morning one time a year. We're aware that we are continuously composting things that need to die and witnessing to new life, our own and others. And every death we experience returns us to the foot of the cross where Jesus has the profound human experience of forsakenness, aloneness, and grief. And I imagine that then as now, those around him and maybe even Jesus himself were wondering, how can this be happening? Jesus faces his death in a way that I think can help us express our own experience of death and resurrection in the world, though he has predicted his death to be imminent to his closest companions. Like so many of us, their love for their friend makes it difficult to believe or even accept. So when the soldiers arrive and the final moments of Jesus' life come, the disciples respond in our human ways, the ones that so often accompany our grief. Reading this story yet again this year, I was surprised to recognize that I had never really noticed how deeply grief is woven in, around, and through it. Maybe it's because of the trauma of ongoing pandemics being met with the abject horror of violence erupting around us, the attacking of Ukraine, the gun violence in our town a few weeks ago, in New York City this week on the subway. Whatever the reason, this year I find myself being reminded of all the many deaths and resurrections that we've been experiencing in our personal and communal lives. Accompanying us this Holy Friday are all of the people all of us have lost to death. In some cases, we are unable to be near them, unable even to bury them, wondering if they felt forsaken. Also accompanying us this Holy Friday are the other deaths that we bring, our canceled plans, our missed holidays and milestone moments with friends, with our families, strained relationships and the changed relationships which we had no control over. We were forced into quarantine with people we sort of knew while forsaking those we love because we didn't live close enough to them. There's also the death of our neighborhood businesses, other institutions we love. All these deaths come alongside this remembrance of Christ's suffering and the grief of those who love him. They can't believe this is happening, and I dare to say that on many levels, neither can we. Like all of us, the early followers of Jesus expressed their grief in a variety of ways. One fears dying just like Jesus, and so he moves towards power and tries to save himself. Another lashes out in anger and even violence in defense of Jesus, willing to do anything in hopes of preventing the death of his teacher and leader. Some are just doing their jobs, trying not to think too hard about all those implications. One closest to Jesus denies him in grief and shame, being unable to bear what's about to happen. There are other ways grief is expressed in this story as well. A leader passes the hard choices up the chain of command instead of taking their own stand. A government official yields to angry mobs. A mother and her companion stay the course, keeping their grief close and choosing not to look away. Unexpected friends step in, and they are the ones to bury Jesus after all of it is finished, busying themselves with the task at hand as they work through their own many feelings. Woven all through this story are the threads of deep grief informing people's responses to the death of Jesus. And surrounding us in our Holy Friday worship around the globe, I believe we witness similar responses to our own collective grief: anger, fear, denial, disappointment, loneliness. All will be with us in our gatherings as we hear this story of Jesus' last moments. So given all this, I confess that I, and maybe some of you all too, felt really tempted to just skip Holy Friday this year and head directly for the celebration of resurrection and Easter and baptism. But I know, and maybe you too, we cannot skip grief. Real resurrection only follows the real experience of death. Barbara Brown Taylor writes it like this: I actually know people who come to church on Holy Friday and who don't come back on Easter. Easter's too pretty. Easter's too cleaned up, they say. It is where they hope to live one day in the land of milk and honey, but right now, Holy Friday is a better match for their souls and its ruthless truth about the stench of death, and I am going to add grief here, and the high price, the high, high price of love. It isn't that they don't care about what happens on Easter Sunday. They do. They just don't believe that God is saving all the good news until then. The reality of the disciples' grief is actually an invitation to all of us to be honest about our own. And the good news in this gospel reading from John is this: that the very heart of God has known grief exactly like our own. can't believe this is happening.
Oh, where have you been, my blue-eyed son? And where have you been, my darling young one? I've stumbled on the side of 12 misty mountains. I've walked and I've crawled on 6 crooked highways. I've stepped in the middle of 7 sad forests. I've been out in front of a dozen dead oceans. I've been 10,000 miles in the mouth of a graveyard. I met a young child beside a dead pony. I met a white man who walked a black dog. I met a young woman whose body was burning. I met a young girl, she gave me a rainbow. I met one man who was wounded in love. I met another man who was wounded in hatred. And it's a hard rain gonna fall. My green-eyed son, and what did you see, my darling young one? I saw a newborn baby with wild wolves all around it. I saw a highway of diamonds with nobody on it. I saw a black branch with blood that kept on dripping. A room full of men with their hammers a-bleeding. I saw 10,000 talkers whose tongues were all broken. I saw guns and sharp swords in the hands of small children. It's a hard, hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard rain gonna fall. And what did you hear, my brown-eyed son? What did you hear, my darling young one? I heard the sound of a thunder that roared out a warning. I heard the roar of a wave that could drown the whole world. I heard 10,000 whispering and nobody listened. I heard one person starve and I heard many people laughing. I heard the song of a poet who died in the gutter. I heard the sound of a clown who died in the alley. And it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard rain gonna fall. Thank you. drops are fallen. I'll walk to the depths of the deepest black forest, where the people are many and the hands are all empty, where the pellets of poison are flooding their waters, where the home in the valley meets the damp, dirty prison, and the executioner's face is always well hidden, where hunger is ugly and the souls are forgotten, where black is the color and none is the number. And I'll tell it, and I'll speak it, and I'll think it and breathe it, and reflect it from the mountains so all souls can see it. And I'll stand on the ocean till I start sinking, but I'll know my song well before I start singing. 'Cause it's a heart, it's a heart, it's a heart, it's a heart, it's a heart. It's a heart, 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 it's a heart. Oh.